Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. It's Mr. Encore. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Check. Fantasy Sports and Politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, come on. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, lock on.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the FSP Crew Show. I am your host, JT, and I'm joined, as always, by my two co-hosts, Black the Bookie and Jeff the Joker. And like we always do, we engage in conversation and give you information about the world of fantasy sports and politics. We have a great show in store for you tonight. We have a legend in the house tonight, which includes a special guest, like I said. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. I'll say that to you again. It's 347-637-3220. We also have a chat room if you'd like to make a comment. If you have a statement or if you want to ask a question, you can do that. The chat room is always open. So without further ado, let's roll into this show by first bringing in my two co-hosts. Hello, fellas, Black and Jeff.
What's going on?
Hi, Jerry. Hi, everybody.
Okay, guys, as you know, we have a special guest tonight. You know, like I said before we started this show off air, I always like talking to someone who founded something, what goes through their minds, how are they willing to put themselves out there. We got have in a house today the founder of the longest-running high school basketball all-star game in the country. Since 1974, it has been a beacon in the Washington, D.C. community, showcasing some of the nation's top high school basketball talent. The game has become a stepping stone for many college All-Americans, NBA All-Stars, and Pro Basketball Hall of Fame recipients, such as Moses Malone, Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, Patrick Ewing, Grant Hill, Carmelo Anthony, LeBron James, Chris Paul, and Dwight Howard.
And don't forget to throw in also the founder of the McDonald's High School All-American Game as well.
I'm getting to that, but you preempted me, but that's fine. So I'm so excited about this. It is a pleasure. To bring in the founder of the Capital Classic and the McDonald's All-Star Game, Mr. Bob Gagan. Did I pronounce your name right?
Yep, that's the way you pronounce it, Gagan. Right. Nice
Bob,
to be on your show. My pleasure. I hope your listeners get a kick out of this.
We talked to you just briefly off air, and I was dumbfounded and I couldn't believe the things that you were telling us. Anyway, Capital Classic. You started it. It started in '74. We had talked about it off air, briefly, or if you can, whatever. Tell us how the Capital Classic got started. I know this is probably redundant, but let our listeners know what you had told us before.
Well, very simply, I grew up in Northeast Washington, D.C., most of my life, and was always a fairly good playground player. I never really made it into playing high school basketball or college or anything else, but I just loved the game of basketball. And because I lived in Northeast, I used to go down on my bicycle, actually, when I was like 10 or 11, down to Turkey Thicket. And that's where a lot of the great high school players in the D.C. area went to play. It was one of the real great playgrounds at that time. And, you know, I got to see Elgin Baylor play when very few people knew who he was. Back in those days, the black schools did not play the white schools. And
right.
They did not get the coverage in the newspapers that a lot of the white schools did. So I was just fascinated by how great they were. and how good they were. And so what happened was, after Elgin Baylor, Dave Bing, Adrian Dantley, in 1974, I used to go oversee the Bullets play quite a bit, and I used to go to a lot of the University of Maryland basketball games, and of course I went to a lot of high school games. In 1965, I met Morgan Wooten, the famed coach at DeMatha High School, who's now in the Basketball Hall of Fame,
right,
when DeMatha High School played and defeated Lou Alcindor's Power Memorial team, which I think had never lost a game in high school. It was the only game that Lou Alcindor lost in high school, and DeMatha beat him by 3 points, and I was at that game. I also worked two Final Fours at the University of Maryland Coalfield House in 1966 and in 1970. And so what kind of happened was I used to go down to Uline Arena when Red Auerbach used to coach the Washington Capitals. That's not the hockey team now. This is the Washington Capitals, which Bones McKinney and a lot of those great players played in. And it was the only pro team that we had in the area. And then, of course, Red moved up to Boston when he became the coach of the Celtics.
Right.
And I used to watch a lot of the games that were televised. There weren't many back in those days. They were all in black and white, of course. So what happened was the Bullets decided to move the Baltimore Bullets over to Washington in 1973. And that's when Abe Pollin decided to build the Capitol Center. And I came up with the idea that, gee, we've got a great hotbed of basketball talent in the Washington area. I wonder if we could expose it to the nation by having them play some of the best players from around the country. So when I called Abe Pollin to see how much it would cost me to rent the Capitol Center, it was a little bit more than I thought I could afford. And I didn't know whether it would really work because I had never actually done anything like this. I didn't have today, as you probably know, you can get a degree in sports marketing and sports management and event management. But back
right.
in those days, there wasn't any such thing. So I was kind of learning as I went. And so I decided to go ahead and do the game, although 95% of my friends and my family and just basketball people said, don't do it there because it seats 19,000, and if you only get 1,000 or 2,000 people, it's going to look bad. But my philosophy was that if you're going to build something where people are going to come, we live in a world of perception and not reality. So if people didn't perceive it to be a big event, maybe they wouldn't show up. So
right.
I decided to take the chance and do it. And lucky for me, there was a young man in Petersburg, Virginia, by the name of Moses Malone. And he was getting a tremendous amount of publicity in the Washington, D.C. area. And the reason was that Lefty Driesell, who had come to Maryland in the late 60s and early 70s, was recruiting him. And the Washington Post was covering big stories in the paper every day about is Lefty going to be able to recruit Moses Malone?
Right.
And so, as I mentioned earlier when we had a chance to chat, I was lucky. I wasn't the smartest guy in the world, didn't necessarily know what I was doing. And the fact that I had a young man named Moses Malone, not Bob Malone, certainly was a marketer's dream.
Right,
and
he sure
we drew 11,000 people that first year, and it was the largest crowd to ever see a high school all-star game in the country at that time. So that's how it got started, and the second year, you know, it grew, and fourth year, fifth year, it kept growing, and I started getting calls from all over the country wanting me to do a high school all-star game in their cities. They kept saying, well, why are you drawing so many people in D.C.? And I thought it was because Washington loves basketball. I thought the fans love high school basketball, and I thought that they were turning out because they wanted to see how this area would do against some of the best players in the country.
Right.
And this was before, keep in mind, this was before the Internet. This was before ESPN. This was before USA Today. I mean, 99% of the people who came to the game didn't know who some of these national players were. And I remember in 1977, that was the fourth year of the event, 1977, I had such a great crop of people and nobody knew who they were, except for a couple of guys who knew who Gene Banks from Philadelphia was, because he had played in a couple of games in D.C. in what was called then, a tournament that a lot of people knew about. And so I got Albert King, Gene Banks, Jeff Rulin, Jeff Lamb, and a guy named Magic Johnson.
Wow.
Come in and play in that game. And so kind of the rest is history. It's just kind of grown, and we sold out the Capitol Center, which set a national record until just recently, of 19,035 in 1979, because I had Samson against Bowie.
Wow.
In 1981, the Capitol Classic had the first All-Star game ever to have 3 7-footers. You know, we had Patrick Ewing. We had Greg Dreiling from Kansas, who later went to Wichita State, and we had Stuart Gray, all 3 7-footers. Stuart Gray eventually went to UCLA.
Right.
But in that 81 game, just so you know, nobody knew who Michael Jordan was. He played in the 1981 game, but he was overshadowed because a lot of people didn't know who he was. But we got him to play in the Capitol Classic, and he obviously is one of the greatest ever to ever play the game. And so I've been very blessed to be able to get such great stars to come into D.C. We used to take them to the White House. We used to take them to Capitol Hill to meet their congressmen. We would take them to see the Vietnam Memorial. Now we can take them to the Martin Luther King Memorial. We got a lot of things in the Washington area that you don't have in any other city in the country.
Right.
This is the nation's capital, and there's only one of it. So we tried to make it an educational experience as well as a basketball experience. So I think that's a quick thumbnail sketch of how it all got started. But I'll let you continue. I didn't want to dominate and keep talking because
I'm pretty sure myself and my two co-hosts are just avid listeners to what you have to say. How do you recruit or how do you decide? What players? I know since it's grown so much, there's got to be a vast amount of players that are willing to play in this tournament. How do you decide who's going to be on these rosters? And tell us about that process.
Well, the local team, I've always tried to I divided the Washington D.C. area up into six jurisdictions. That was Montgomery County, Prince George's County. The Inner High, the Prep Privates, and Northern Virginia. And I figured that the best players in the D.C. area, we got 150 schools here, so the best 10 or 12 that are going to play against the U.S. All-Stars are going to come from, I usually have a couple of meetings and we sit down and try to figure out who are the best players that are going to be able to compete. So I have a committee made up of high school coaches from those six jurisdictions. And that's how I decide who's going to be on the Capitol All-Stars. Now, the U.S. All-Stars is a little bit different. I try and get the best players I can get. In 1982, we never had any problem. Like I told you, the first year we had Butch Lee, who Moses was our big attraction because everybody had heard about him. And
right.
when I got him to agree to play, and Maryland was recruiting him heavily, and he was in the Washington Post every day practically, that was what, you know, because back in those days, a lot of the people didn't know who some of the best players around the country were.
Right.
Rick Roby was from Louisiana. Mike Phillips was from Ohio. And they met here in D.C. and decided to go to Kentucky together. They were both 6'10 centers. And they became friends here and decided to go to Kentucky, and they won a national championship with Joe B. Hall as the coach.
Right. Wow.
Butch Lee came out of New York City as one of the best guards that they ever
right.
had, and he
right.
later won a national championship with Al McGuire at
Marquette.
But the thing was, people didn't know who these people were because there was no internet, there was no USA Today, there was no ESPN, and so I was very fortunate because the second year, I just sold people on who we had last year. I said, come see the future stars, because we had last year you saw Moses Malone, you saw Butch Lee, you saw whatever. And so that crop of kids in 78 or 75, most people didn't know who the U.S. kids were. So it was a tricky kind of a thing, and I never knew how well it was going to do, but I was very blessed, as I said before, by having great fans, fans who loved high school basketball, who wanted to see the future. And so I always sold the past to let them know who played in the game in the past, because back in those days, remember, I told you I was very lucky, because the year or two before, they had changed the NCAA rules, which would allow freshmen to play on the varsity.
Right. Okay.
So right away, guys would play in my game as high school seniors, and they could become a superstar in college as freshmen, because they could start and play. They didn't
right.
have to sit out a year and play on freshman teams. So I think that was one thing that benefited us, and so that's how the whole thing got started. And like I said, there's no magic formula. Sometimes I don't get some of the best players, and what's happened currently, just to bring your listeners up to what's going on now, is in 1982, the NCAA, in their wisdom, as they usually do, they come up with trying to put all the All-Star games out of business, because they were complaints that kids were missing too much school. And I thought they were picking on a minority of kids, because I said, look, my next-door neighbor, who was a white gymnast, she missed half the school year because she was traveling all over the country and sometimes overseas to compete. She was an elite gymnast. And you might remember a little girl down in West Virginia named Mary Lou Retton, who quit high school when she was like 13 to go down and live in Houston, and because she wanted to be an elite gymnast. And so I kept telling the NCAA they're punishing kids who shouldn't be punished by eliminating these All-Star games. And because college coaches used to be able to come, and a lot of kids got scholarships from playing in the Capitol Classic.
Right.
I'll tell you a quick story, not to divert, but Mike Pepper, who's not a name everybody would recognize, he played for Stu Vetter, who you might know now as a big coach, big-time coach at Montrose Christian. Well, he played in the preliminary game for me, never had one scholarship offer, and Dean Smith saw him play and offered him a scholarship to North Carolina, and by the time Mike Pepper was a senior, he was a starter for North Carolina.
Wow.
And we had a lot of those success stories of kids who probably wouldn't have gotten a scholarship, but they got seen by playing in the prelim game or playing in the major game. And so that got me a lot of satisfaction, because it gave a lot of exposure to college coaches. Now, times have changed, obviously. You know, coaches are all over the place. The kids play all over the summertime in AAU tournaments, and it's very rare now for a coach not to know who the best players are. But back in those days, it was a little bit different.
Right.
So anyway, that's kind of how I do it. I just try to invite as many players. But getting back to my story, in 1982, I had to spend 6 months lobbying the NCAA not to eliminate all the All-Star games. I said it wasn't fair, and I had to get 6 athletic directors from around the country to take my proposal to the floor of the convention down in Houston, actually, at that time. Because I was not a member of the NCAA, I had to have representatives represent me who were members of the NCAA, and I got them to put in the 2-game limit. So instead of eliminating all the All-Star games, they would allow a kid to play in 2.
Okay.
And that's what happened now, because there are so many other All-Star games, with the McDonald's All-American game, with Michael Jordan now having his own game. While he was originally part of the Capitol Classic when he was here, and he played in the game in 81, but then when he got fired in the spring of 03, he did not want to be, obviously, part of the Capitol Classic, and he didn't want to have anything to do with the Washington, D.C. area.
Okay.
And he wanted me to move my game to wherever he was going, and I said no, because I didn't want to turn my back on the Washington area, the Washington fans, the Washington coaches, and the Washington players
right.
who have supported the game all those years. And so,
exactly.
So Michael started his own game. So you got the Derby Classic in Louisville, you got the Capitol Classic, you got the McDonald's game, you got the Jordan game, and then there's one more that just started 2 years ago, and so a kid can only play in 2. And so it's tough to try and get some of the best players in the country because, you know, they might prefer to play in the McDonald's game because it's nationally televised and it's considered the premier game of all of them. And then they might pick Michael Jordan's game over the Cap Classic. Sometimes they'll pick the Capitol Classic over Michael Jordan's. And so we do struggle a little bit in this current age, but we always get some great players. I mean, they may not be McDonald's All-Americans, but they're Division I players. We've got a great group of kids this year who are going to. We got four recruits who are going to be in Maryland's lineup next year.
Right.
That Mark Turgeon is very excited about. We got a kid, you know, as you probably know, the national or the local. Boy player of the year, Holloway out of Fall the City,
Fall
who finished number one. Yeah, he's going to George Mason, and we got a kid out of Episcopal who's going to GW. The other kid out of there is going to Wake Forest. So all of these are going to be major players in college, and so I'm always proud of the fact that these kids are selected to come in and play in this game. And so I think the fans who come out on Saturday night are going to see a great contest. The U.S. kids are always loaded. They got 3 6-10 guys, you know, who are ones going to North Carolina to play for Roy Williams. I mean, the locals always have a little bit of a struggle, although they have won, you know, they've won a fair amount of the time because they have a lot to play for. They're playing for the pride of Washington, D.C.,
right.
They try a little bit harder, like Avis, and I think the U.S. kids, when they come in, they're coming from all different parts of the country, and they really never have played together.
Right.
And so we have a little bit of an advantage if the local kids will take advantage of it, in that the esprit de corps, the willingness to work a little harder, out hustle them, and a couple times of course the fans, as you can guess, are all rooting for the Capitol All-Stars. They're rooting for the local kids
sure.
to win, and they really get excited when they do win. I mean, some of the games have been very close, and it's been a real thrill when the local kids do upset them. But on paper, the local kids should never beat the U.S. team.
Right. All right.
Because
I want to
go ahead.
Go ahead, Bob. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. I didn't mean to keep talking, but once I get going, I just can't stop sometimes.
That's all right. That's what got you from 1974 to now. So I understand that. I want to bring in Black first, because he's the Mike. He's the one that got you to come on the show. I want to get him to ask a few questions, then I'll have Jeff do the same. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay, great.
Oh, yes. This Well, of course, I won't see you until Saturday, but I'll be out there tomorrow for media day. A couple of the local kids, Justin Anderson, great guy from Montrose Christian, he'll be going to the UVA. And the,
yep.
the national squad, I mean, it's loaded. I mean, Shaquille Clear, Montrose, Terrell, Evan Nolte, Joel James, Andrew White, even Clarence Patel Jr. is also playing in this game. So, people, you want to get your tickets. You want to be at T.C. Williams Saturday night, 6:30. That's the first game, and the next game is at 8 p.m. Wonderful, wonderful tournament, Capitol Classic. I was out there last year. Jabari Harris is currently at West Virginia. He got the MVP of the U.S. game. He's guard number 4 for West Virginia. Make sure you check him out. These guys are future stars. We want to support this tournament. Kobe, I mean, Mr.
Hagan
is a legend in the earth.
We want to
support this
person.
We want to keep this thing going.
Hey, Jeff, do you have any questions for Bob?
Wow. I got a lot of questions for Bob. I want to try to narrow it down to the good ones. I just really enjoy hearing him talk about all these Hall of Famers and All-Stars. And I wanted to interject one of the first names he mentioned. Some of our younger listeners might not be familiar with Lew Alcindor. He changed his name to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, one of the all-time greats. I think it was early in his pro career when he was playing for Milwaukee, he changed his name. But, yeah, when he was at Powell Memorial, they were practically invincible. Wow, just really enjoy hearing all this basketball history. I'm from North Jersey, and you know, like every area, we have our local legends. One of our local legends was Les Caisson, and he practically put Dick Vitale on the map. Did he play in your game?
No, he did not. And let me just say this. I don't try to pretend like every great player plays in my game, nor does every great player play in the McDonald's game. I've told people that there's 25,000 high schools in this country and 800,000 kids playing high school basketball.
Right.
And when you're only inviting 10 or 12 kids to come, obviously you're leaving out a tremendous amount of kids. So we've had a pretty good track record because some of the players who played in our game that you had already pre-mentioned, they've gone on to really become superstars either in college or in the pros. But there's just so many great players out there. But, you know, obviously there are some that we don't obviously get.
And I'm glad you won that battle with the NCAA and were able to reach a compromise that players could play in two All-Star games. That sounds reasonable. And I was thinking about it. I mean, I didn't play basketball in high school, and I was able to miss a couple days of school to visit colleges. And believe me, the way my parents were, unless you broke a leg and were gushing blood, they didn't let you miss school. But because it was important, I missed a couple days, maybe two, maybe three, to visit colleges where I'd be spending my next 4 years. So if a kid misses a little school time, you know, for an All-Star game, that doesn't seem unreasonable.
No, I think here's my position. When I asked the NCAA when they tried to do this, I said, what right does the NCAA have to do legislating these things against kids who aren't even in college? And they said, well, we don't think anybody's going to challenge us. Because you know what the punishment was? If you played in a third All-Star game, you'd be forbidden to play your freshman year. So, you know, the punishment didn't fit the crime, but that's how they were trying to enforce the rule of the two-game limit, which still exists today. But I've often said, here's the three people that I used to get permission from for the kid to miss two or three days to come to the nation's capital, have an educational experience as well as a basketball experience. And the three people I thought should have the say-so over whether that kid missed two or three days of school were three people and only three people, not the Washington Post, not the New York Times, not Sports Illustrated, not the NCAA. The three people that I respected the most, who I asked permission for, was their guardian or parent, their principal of their high school, and their coach at their high school. If all three of those people said the kid was academically sound, he could miss 3 days of school, that's all I needed. That's the only three people I respected enough to tell me whether he could play or not. And there were a couple occasions. And there have been a couple of big-name players, which I won't necessarily name, who their guardian, their parent, and their coach said, well, you can't miss 3 days, but we'll let him come in the night before. And I said,
okay.
Fine. I said, fine. That's okay. And even today, we have the kids who are staying in the hotel. We give them an hour study hall every morning because some of the parents have expressed that, look, these kids are, you know, not doing fantastic, and we want to make sure they have their hour study hall. So we have monitors at the hotel before they go to practice in the morning, giving them an hour study hall. So we respect the educational part of this too, because I've often said, and I'm not the only one. I've heard so many people, you know, talk about it. Is that so many kids today want to grow up and be Michael Jordan? They think they're going to make $1 million playing in the pro leagues, but not everybody's going to make it. And even
right.
those who do make it, what we try to tell them is that someday they're going to take the ball out of your hands, and they're going to say, what are you going to do the rest of your life? And so that's why we stress education. We want to make sure that they're well-rounded individuals. We want to make sure that they don't flunk out of college. We want to make sure that you know, they got their priorities straight, you know, that everything doesn't have to revolve around basketball because it can be fleeting. And you're only a hero as long as you can perform. And then once that, they cast you aside. And you can see a lot of pros today who, you know, they get 1 or 2 years in the league and then they get cut. So you can't rely on that. And so we've always tried to instill in them about giving back to the community and also to make sure they get their studies, because basketball only going to last a short time in their life, and then what else are they going to do?
Right. I got a question, Bob. How did the McDonald's All-Star came? You had the Capitol. Now we have the McDonald's that you talked about. Talk to us about that.
Well, that was kind of an interesting thing. I went to the McDonald's people in 77. That was the year I told you Magic Johnson, Albert King, Gene Banks, and those people. And I went to them and I said, look, we call the visiting team here the United States All-Stars. And I said, the only All-American team that I was aware of was Parade Magazine. And I said, the Parade Magazine had an All-Star team that they would list the top 40. But they never went anywhere. They never played. They just had their picture and name in the magazine. And I said, why don't we create the McDonald's All-American team? I said, and create a game where you could pit the best guards in the East against the best guards in the West, best big men in the East against the best big – because even the Capitol Classic, it was a lot of great players coming in to play our local players. And they liked the idea, but they didn't think the game would work, because they said the only reason that I was successful with the Capitol Classic was because fans turned out to support the local kids. And with no local kids in a national game, fans wouldn't show up. And so strangely enough, in 77, Brent Musburger, who was with CBS Sports at the time, called me and wanted to come down, and he wanted to film a little minute segment and show it at a later time. And I asked him, I said, well, why would you be interested in televising the whole game? And he said, oh, no, he said, it's too localized for network television. You know, it's not national enough. And I said, so what you're telling me is if I can get a national game off the ground, CBS might be interested in televising it. And there was no high school event of any kind that was nationally televised.
Right.
So I thought that the best thing for me to do was try to get this national game off the ground. I couldn't do it here because we had the Capitol Classic. So I was approached by, as I mentioned to you earlier, I've started getting calls from around the country, because we had 11, 12. By about the fourth year of the Capitol Classic, we were drawing about 14,000 people, and I was getting calls from the Summit down in Houston and the different arenas around the country saying, "Gee, we hear about you drawing these games for high school thing. Can you come up and do one for us?" And I said, "I only want to do a national game." And Pat Williams, who was the general manager of the 76ers at the time, he's now with the Orlando Magic.
Right.
He was the president of Orlando Magic. But he came down to the game just to see what all the fuss was about. And so after that game was over, he tapped me on the shoulder and he said, "Mr. Gagan, I want to introduce myself. I'm from the 76ers, and I'm really fascinated about how you market this and how you get so many people to come out. Can you come up to Philadelphia to do a game for me up there?" I said, "Well, McDonald's doesn't think it'll work. But I believe it will, and I think whoever does the first national game, and if they do it the right way, with the right people, I think that it has a great chance of success." And so he gave me his business card and told me to come up and meet him in a couple of weeks. And so I called McDonald's out of a courtesy more than anything else and said, "Look, I'm going up to Philadelphia. Pat Williams thinks my idea and my vision is good, and I'm going to be honest with you. I don't want you to read it in the paper, but if you don't want to be involved, I'm going to go ahead and do it without you." And so they agreed to come to Philadelphia and meet with me. And so in 1978, we did the first McDonald's All-American game. That was the year of Mark Aguirre. And we drew a little over 11,000 people at the Spectrum. And nobody knew it was going to last 35 years. I just completed my 35th year.
Wow.
We did it in Chicago this past year, March 28th. And so I'm kind of retiring from that game. And next year will be the 40th year for the Capitol Classic, and I'm definitely going to retire after that. And I'm trying to find a group of people who have the same passion and the same love for the game and the and the same desire to keep this game going. And for your listeners, it might be interesting to know that this is the first year we've ever played the Capital Classic at a high school. And I was surprised that you didn't ask me how come we're playing at PC Williams. And the truth of the matter, is that the NCAA came out with another rule just recently that said you cannot have a high school all-star game on the campus of a college. And so you can't play it at Maryland, you can't play it at AU, GW, or any place like that. And so I was going to move it back to the Verizon Center, where it hasn't been for a couple of years. And they said, well, that you can't do it there because that's Georgetown's home court. And I said, wait a minute. They're renting Verizon Center just like I would be renting the Verizon Center. They don't own the building. It's not on their campus. And so I got into a big tussle with the NCAA about whether I could have the game there, but they said, if you have it there, we're going to punish Georgetown. And I said,
wow.
Really? I said they don't have anything to do with it. And they said, well, the rule reads that any NCAA institution that allows a high school all-star game to be on their campus will be punished. So I decided I didn't want to get Georgetown in trouble this year because I got a lot of great friends there. A lot of our kids play there. I support all the local colleges. I go to Maryland games. I go to GW's games. I sometimes go to AU, and sometimes I go to some Georgetown games. And so I decided that, okay, I'm going to fight the NCAA to get this rule overturned, and I believe I'll be successful just like I was in 1982, because sometimes rules are made up by people who don't really think it through and don't really know what they're doing. And so I think if you use logic and common sense, it makes no sense to punish these kids by not letting them play at the Verizon Center. And so I think I'll overturn it, and the 40th year will be at the Verizon Center. But the real reason I picked, of all the high schools I could have gone to, I picked PC Williams, and you won't guess why.
Why is that?
Well, you may not remember the name, but Earl Lloyd. I don't know if that name rings a bell to any of you or any of your listeners, but he played way, way back when at a school in Alexander called Parker Gray, which was an all-black school.
Okay.
And after segregation and integration happened, they merged with T.C. Williams. And Earl Lloyd, just for those listeners who don't know, he was the first black to play in the NBA or play professional basketball. It was the CBA, I believe, at the time. But he's in the Basketball Hall of Fame as a contributor, and his name is on the floor of T.C. Williams.
Wow.
It's called the Earl Lloyd Court. And so I called Earl Lloyd and said, would you come up for the Capital Classic? I'd love to have you be our honorary chairman. We're going to play at the high school where your uniform hangs in their awards lockers. And he agreed to come. And that's the reason I'm having it at T.C. Williams, except, to be honest with you, 2 weeks ago he called me and said he's having eye surgery and that he drives. He does not fly. He's 82 years or 84 years old now, but he's not going to be able to make it up this year. And so I had made a commitment to do it at T.C. Williams, and that's where the game is going to be played. So
okay.
we may have a special recognition of Earl Lloyd. I might even name the MVP trophy after him. But anyway, I was disappointed that he couldn't come, but I could certainly understand because with the eye surgery, he and his wife both drive, but he didn't want to come up unless he had his eye surgery completed, and I certainly understood it. And hopefully we'll get him to come back up next year. But I thought that was an interesting backstory to the whole thing of why we're at T.C. Williams.
Yeah, because I was just going to ask you, did you give any consideration of going back to the Showplace Arena where you had a last year?
I did give it consideration to go back there. And and like I said, I was kind of torn because there were a couple of other places that even Wise High School, as you might know, is a fairly new high school, about 5 years old. they seat more people there in Upper Marlboro as well. And so I was kind of torn because Showplace wanted me to come back, but I just thought that because of Earl Lloyd, and there's another young guy named Skeeter Swift who played at GW many, 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 many years ago, and he's going to try to come up. Skeeter is one of two public school players, along with Earl Lloyd, who made it into the pros. And so I think Skeeter may still come by. I'm pretty sure he will. And so if he does, I want him to come by and maybe hand out the MVP trophies too. But I just felt so strongly because of, remember the Titans movie?
Sure.
You know,
sure.
I thought that T.C. Williams was a great story in itself, and then the Earl Lloyd thing just kind of threw me over the top, and I guess I'm an emotional guy, and I just thought, it's destiny. I got to have it there.
Okay. Okay. Jeff, you have anything else for Mr. Gagan?
And I want you to name drop. Okay, besides Moses Malone, did you have any other players to go straight from high school to the pros?
Well, let's see. From the Capitol Classic?
Yeah. Or McDonald's.
Well, of course, McDonald's, we've had a ton of them.
Right.
The first one, of course, was 1995, Kevin Garnett.
Right. Okay.
Before that, I think there were a couple of other guys besides Moses. Moses went to the ABA, as you know. There were a couple of other guys, but not many, maybe two or three that jumped into the pros. But it was very discouraged for a long, long time. And then Kevin Garnett opened the floodgates and went straight to the pros. And then almost every year after that, there was one or two kids who went straight from high school to the pros. It was a rash of them until the NCAA and the NBA kind of agreed that you had to stay in school at least 1 year. And that's what's happening now, that you have the one and done. And which I don't think is good for college basketball, although it certainly hasn't hurt its popularity. But I think the majority of people I've talked to would rather not see a kid just play 1 year of college ball and leave.
Speaking of that, we had a, for lack of a better term, Fab Five, the Kentucky Wildcats team, the starting five or whatever of the Kentucky Wildcats, they said they are going to take their talents to the NBA, all five of them. What do you think?
A lot of them. I mean, Anthony Davis played in the McDonald's game last year,
right.
You know, for me, but.
Right.
I've known John Calipari since he was an assistant coach at UMass. And I'll take that back. He was assistant coach at Pittsburgh, and then he became the head coach at UMass. And he put me on to Marcus Campbell. And I still stay close to John. As a matter of fact, I'm hoping to get him to come up to Washington, D.C. sometime in the next month or two, because I want to give him the College Coach of the Year Award. He's agreed to come. I just don't know what date it's going to be. But I happen to be an admirer of his, I guess just because I know him. There's some people think he's a wheeler dealer and they don't like his style. The Fab Five, kids have to do what they think is in their best interest. Sometimes I think they jump too early. There's been a lot of kids over the years who have left college or went right from high school to the pros that didn't make it. And there's a lot of stories out there. I mean, you always hear about Michael Jordan and Kevin Durant, some of the ones who've made it, and a lot of them have made it, but there's a lot of them that do not make it. Those are the rules of the game, and so obviously if you notice that I think a couple of years ago, the first players, I think it was Corey Maggette, was the first Duke player to ever leave before finishing 4 years. Because Coach K did a pretty good job of keeping those kids in school, getting them educated, graduating on time, and all that stuff. But But sometimes the kid has dreams, just like I had a dream. I had a dream and I had a vision of creating this game, and it became a reality. And so sometimes you can't stop people from having dreams, and they want to pursue those dreams. And so I'm all for rules and regulations, and I'm all for, you know, but I don't think you have, you can't stifle a person's individuality. But if I were a college coach, I would hate to recruit kids who are only going to be one and done. Because
right.
You're investing so much time and energy in getting them, and then shortly thereafter they leave. And I remember when Marbury, I think Marbury was 95 too, when he played in the McDonald's game, same year as Kevin Garnett. And Bobby Kremins was at Georgia Tech. And he was recruiting heavily out of New York, and he wanted Marbury real bad. And I told him, you know, Bobby, I said, you know, he's going to be one and done, and you're putting a lot of time and energy to get him. And you know, unless you win the national championship right away, like Calipari did, you know, it's frustrating to bring in somebody of his talent and then have him leave after 1 year. Then you're
right.
The cupboard's bare, and you're starting all over again.
Well,
and,
speaking of leaving. You said you're going to be retiring from McDonald's and also from the Capital Classic. Now, you've invested a lot of time and energy over the years in both these events. What do you plan? What does Bob Gagan plan on doing after he retires from this?
Well, you know, nothing lasts forever. I've always said that, and I think that's probably going to be on my tombstone. That's going to be my epitaph. Nothing lasts forever. I'm going to write a book. I've been kicking around a title. I think that I've been the luckiest guy. If you love basketball, I've got to be one of the luckiest guys who had no talent, who was kind of a behind-the-scenes guy. Not many people know my name, and I'm not out front type of guy. I'm usually behind the scenes running everything. And I've got to be the luckiest guy in the world because I've got to meet some of the greatest people in basketball. I mean, just think about it. John Wooden, until he passed away a couple of years ago, I got him to be on my team 2 years after he retired from UCLA after winning 10 national championships. I had Morgan Wooten on my team, who's in the Basketball Hall of Fame along with
right.
John Wooden.
Right.
You know, I met some of the greatest coaches, you know, from Red Auerbach, and I've just been meeting some of the greatest players in the world as well. And I just think that I've had the best seat in the house. And that's going to be the name of my book. The best seat in the house.
I like that title, and as soon as you come out with that book, I'm going to rush to buy it because I know it's going to be a fascinating read.
Well, I think that I'm always happy when people like to hear me tell some of my stories because that's what this whole thing is about. It's for the kids and for the charities that we have raised money for, the Ronald McDonald House, the coaches who participated. I can't tell you, all the coaches around the country, high school coaches that I've met, some of the greatest in the country. And they all speak so highly of having that one opportunity to coach in the game. And so I think the game, to me, just to me, my own personal feeling is the game has created so many good memories. Good memories for the players. When I talk to certain players, they remember, they talk about the game and what happened in the game and who they played with. So it's created great memories for me. And so I like to tell the stories sometimes because they're meaningful to me, and sometimes I enjoy it when other people enjoy me telling them. So I think that if I can write a good book with some behind-the-scenes stuff, And having observed it all from the best seat in the house, because I usually sit on the scorer's table right next to the PA announcer, and I've got a front row seat. And getting to meet up close and personal some of these great players, who some of them I still stay in touch with, and some of the great coaches, high school-wise, and the
right.
pros. And so I've got to be the luckiest guy in the world because if you love basketball, you know, I've been the most fortunate one that I can think of.
Wow. The tickets are on sale online at capitalclassic.ticketsocket.com.
Actually, you know what? Can I interrupt you for a minute?
Sure.
Let me. I got something I forgot to tell you in the beginning. I don't know if you know Pennington Green. Pennington Green is doing a documentary on the history of high school basketball. And they interviewed me several times back, and I told them everything I know about D.C. basketball. And so they have a website that's easier to remember. Just go to dcbasketball.com. dcbasketball.com. And you can order tickets to the Capital Classic on their website, because I'm going to donate some money from the game to dcbasketball.com, which is trying to do this documentary. And they've just about finished it. They're trying to get some extra investors so they can get it on air. But Pennington Green, I hadn't thought about it when I met him about it less than a year ago, and we sat down to talk about his project. He played in the first Capital Classic in 1974.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
When he played for Parkdale High School, and he was upset that I didn't pick him for the main game. He played in the prelim game.
Wow.
And so he was telling me this story, and that's the story that I'm going to tell in my book, because I did not know that until he told me. He played for Snooky Cronin, who was one of the great players at McKinley Tech High School in the early 50s, and they were called actually the Fabulous Five. But the bottom line is he got a full four-year scholarship to South Florida because he got seen playing in the prelim game of the Capital Classic. Isn't that a great story?
That is a very dynamite story.
So if your listeners, whether they buy tickets to the Capital Classic or not, I want everybody who's listening tonight to go to dcbasketball.com, because he's researched this and he's interviewed a lot of people. He's got a great website. He's going to be at the game. He's coming up from Atlanta where he lives, and he's going to be at the game on Saturday night at T.C. Williams. You can meet him. And I've given him a little booth out in the hallway so that he can hand out some of the literature about his documentary and what he's trying to do and so forth and so on. So I think you'll find him a very fascinating person. I think the documentary is terrific. And if you're a basketball fan and you live in D.C., it's something I think that you'll want to know about. And so I would encourage everybody, it's easier to remember. And go to capitalclassic.com or any of the other. Just dcbasketball.com.
Okay. Black, you have anything more for Bob?
No, I'll see Bob Saturday night.
Okay.
Okay, I'll look for you. Make sure you come up and introduce yourselves.
I
definitely will.
What about Jeff? You got anything, Jeff?
I'm on the road right now. If I was home, I'd be on the computer looking this up. You mentioned Marcus Camby. Who went on to be a great defensive player in the NBA and very popular in the New York area because of his time with the Knicks. Did he even play high school basketball, or did he play AAU ball? Because I remember unknown.
Yeah, he played high school basketball. He was one of these sleepers, that didn't get a whole lot of recognition when he was playing in high school. And that's when, like I said, John Calipari put me on to him, and he played in the Capital Classic. I think that there's been a number of those kids around the country over the years. You remember the kid named Perkins who played at North Carolina and later for
Jim Perkins, I remember him, yeah.
Yeah. Well, he was from upstate New York, too. And he was the last guy that I chose for the McDonald's All-American game in 1980. And because he didn't have a great career, but he was projected to be a great college and potential. He had great potential, and so I picked him. He was the last guy I chose, and he set the all-time rebounding record. It still holds today. From 1980 to now, nobody's broken his rebounding record. He got 24 rebounds in the 1980 McDonald's All-American game, and it still is a record.
Wow.
And I came this close to not picking him. So there are people like Camby and Perkins who sometimes are below the radar, And I've often said this, too. There's some kids that are great high school players, but they never get any better.
Right.
There are some kids who are mediocre high school players who became better in college and even better in the pros. And I'll give you one right from this area. David Robinson. David Robinson did not make the Capitol Classic. And you know why? Because he wasn't very good. He was only like 6'4" in high school, played in Northern Virginia, didn't make my prelim game and didn't make the main game. But he
wow.
went to the Naval Academy, and at the Naval Academy, he grew like 6 or 7 inches. He became an All-American at Navy, as most of you probably know, and then
right.
later played for the San Antonio Spurs, won national championships, and played 14 years, and is one of the all-time top 50 players of all time in the NBA. So there are kids who continually improve as they mature, and there's other ones who reach their potential in high school but never get any better. And there's been a number of those kids who were great high school players but just never made it in college, never made it in the pros.
Well, Bob, it's been almost an hour, and we've been fascinated and spellbound by the things that you've been telling us about your life story and how things have been going for you and how things came to fruition through the McDonald's and also the Capitol Classic. I want to thank you. Definitely thank you for spending some time with us. Hopefully we can have you back on sometime in the future. It's been a pleasure. I would appreciate it.
Well, listen, it's been my pleasure, and I hope your listeners enjoyed it as well.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Take care.
All right. Have a great night.
You too.
All right. Thanks, Mr. Garland. Appreciate it.
Okay, people, that was Bob Gagin. He was a wealth of knowledge, the founder of the McDonald's All-Star High School Classic and also the Capitol Classic, which is the longest-running high school All-Star game in the country. I don't know what to say. I mean, I'm at a loss for words, and this is the first time I've probably been at a loss for words because he had a wealth of knowledge, and he was not shy about letting us know how things came about. What do you guys got to say? We got about 3 minutes left in the show. How about you, Black?
Oh man, DC legend, man. He'll also be for people in the Washington area. The Washington, D.C. Metropolitan Basketball Hall of Fame Dinner to honor Lynn Bias will take place May 5th, 2012. And he is on the committee, Bob Gagin. Mr. Bob Gagin is on the D.C. Hall of Fame Committee. People to be honored there are Lynn Bias, Phil Chenier, Rich Chavagin, Bob Furry, Johnny Holiday, and the guy he mentioned, Earl Lloyd. So I'm glad he mentioned Earl Lloyd because now I have a history of Earl Lloyd. Got a little bit of background info. And I look forward to May 5th. I'll be attending that day.
Okay. Before I go to Jeff, I want to take a commercial break, and then from the commercial break, I come back and get Jeff's comments. We'll be right back.
Indu Studio 9 and Corrupted Nature Entertainment presents Wasted Wednesday's Reggae Hip Hop Showcase. Hosted by D-Champ CEO, with 93.9's DJ Analyze on the ones and twos. Starting Wednesday, April 25th, and every Wednesday following, at Ross Lounge, 4809 Georgia Avenue, Northwest. Doors open at 9, ladies free till 11, and $5 after. Men $10 all night, $3 Ross Punch, $100 bottles, and group of 5 females get a free bottle of champagne. 21 and up to enter. For showcase sign up, contact D-Champ at 202-440-6550. Be there. Be there.
Okay, we're back. Jeff, we got about 90 seconds left in the show. What are your final comments?
Wow, it's flown by. It's been a pleasure. I'd like to thank Black for getting us another excellent guest.
Absolutely.
And if you could, I'd like to hear again about, he mentioned something about Memorial to Len Bias. And I think it's important that especially young people know who he is, because a few years ago, a couple of younger coworkers had no idea who he was, and that made me feel so old. But if Black could repeat that and maybe share a link, I'd appreciate it. And thank you guys, as always, and thank everybody for listening.
Okay. Hey, Black, you want to go real quick with that?
Yeah, the, you know, Dylan and Bias was definitely big in the area where I'm from. I'm in D.C., the listeners know that. But D.C., Maryland, Virginia area, Lynn Bias is very big, very, very big in the area. A lot of people miss him. He's been posthumously honored in the D.C. Metropolitan Basketball Hall of Fame dinner, which will take place May 5th at the Capitol Hilton. Ceremony will be at 6 p.m.
Is there some type of link or no?
You can check it out on D.C. The press release is on dcbasketball.com.
Okay. All right, so we're going into overtime to close this show out. I want to thank my co-host, Jeff the Joker, and definitely my other co-host, Black the Bookie, for booking Mr. Gagan. And also a big shout-out to Mr. Gagan for spending about 50 minutes with us, which is more than I possibly thought he was going to spend with us. And had a wealth of things that he had to say and wanted to get out and seemed like a very humble type of guy. Tune in next week. You never know who we're going to get. We could have a special guest. We'll be probably talking about it either on Saturday or Sunday on a master plan. Saturday, which is the FSP show with hosted by Vic Gardner, co-hosted by myself and also Black, and maybe Jeff will jump in. And then also on the master plan, I'm the host of that. Maybe Black will jump in. Maybe Vic will come in. Maybe Jeff. Jeff has been there the last couple of weeks. Maybe he'll jump in. Maybe even Kim Fun was there last week. So who knows who will jump in on the master plan. This week I think we're going to be concluding Saturday and Sunday. The first three rounds of the NFL draft as we see it. So tune in for that, which is FSP at 1 o'clock, Master Plan on Saturday, FSP on Saturday at 1 o'clock, Master Plan 10 o'clock on Sunday, and then we'll be doing that. And then Kim Fun on Tuesday at 4 Eastern Standard Time, you can catch her. But if you want to catch the ones you really want to talk to or listen to, you catch the FSP Crew Show at 8 o'clock on Thursdays. Every week we're here. And we're ready to give you some information and engage in the conversation, as always. I want to thank my hosts, Black and Jeff, until we talk either on Saturday, Sunday, or even next week. Enjoy the week. Enjoy whatever is going to happen on the weekend. I'm talking too much. I'm out.
Yeah. It's Mr. Encore. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Check. Fantasy Sports and Politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew.